a t-shirt and jeans, mac and cheese. Some things in life are an obvious match, like RIAs and Schwab Advisor Services, the number one choice for independent advisors. The difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Learn why at schwabvious.com.
Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Thursday. So glad to have you all here. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we try to pull the threads of empire and reveal the deep state that's underneath running the whole clown show. And boy, Pakistan is a ground zero example of the deep state trying to run things. The U.S.-backed coup, the UK-backed coup, which has been kind of a terrible failure, as evidence over the last 48 hours, as chaos has hit the streets, protests taking to the streets. But a huge update on the potential civil war in Pakistan. We've got a huge update on the Supreme Court and what the arrest of Imran Khan looks like at this hour. So we're going to be taking you there and going into all the latest protests and what this means for the larger Middle East and the U.S. relations with that region.
And what does the semiconductor industry have to do with war in Taiwan, a possible war between China and the United States? It does all pivot around big business and money. We have Dan Cohen today to break that down for us.
Yeah, and why would the United States want to attack Taiwan? So that's the biggest question in all of it. Plus, Bud Light has much bigger problems than Dylan Mulvaney and their whole ad campaign. You know, they're like, oh, that was a mistake. That was just an ad agency. No. There's much bigger issues at this company, and we're going to talk about the wokeness that is permeating all of some of these big corporations. So we'll get to all of that. Plus, Whitney Webb is going to be joining us with all of these new Epstein revelations. Wait till you hear what he was doing in the U.S. Virgin Islands and planning as it relates to going after small children. Unbelievable story. We're going to dive into that and so much more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Thursday. We've got a lot of news to get to today, so we want to cut right to the chase, but we want to tell you about our newsletter, and it's totally free. If you go to redacted.inc, it's the perfect way to start your day. We get emails from all of you, or not all of you, but many of you that email and say it's the perfect way to start your day. You get a newsletter from us, which you can read in about 5 or 10 minutes over your cup of coffee first thing in the morning, and all you need to do is go to redacted.inc, not.com, put in your email address, and you'll receive a welcome email from us. And then with that welcome email, you just need to verify it. And then tomorrow morning, Monday through Friday, you'll get the newsletter first thing in the morning. And again, you can enjoy it. About 5 or 10 minutes it takes you to read it. We cover like 4 or 5 of the big stories. We covered the Biden documents and the revelations about the $10 million that the Biden family was receiving from China and Romania and all of that. We covered that in the newsletter this morning, among other big stories. So again, redacted.inc is the place to go to subscribe. Perfect way to start your day. So any other housekeeping items before we kick off?
Let's remind everybody that the people who will chime in are Philip and David. They are brothers and they are our producers. Say hello, boys.
Hello.
Hello.
All right. And we are married. So if you feel like, wow, this news team gets intimate or, yes. You know, they say things that are kind of familiar to each other, that's why.
Yeah, exactly. We are a married couple.
My studio is in Tatooine today. If you notice, if you go full screen, Philip, back on here, I am in Tatooine.
Oh, I like that.
Outside, so.
Very nice.
Yeah, I do like
very
that.
Very nice.
Yeah. And, and tomorrow, Tears of the Kingdom comes out. So very exciting around here. Yep. Okay, let's get to it. So let's talk about if you want to see what a country looks like after the United States launches a coup to overthrow a government, look no further than Pakistan. Perfect example of Pakistan, a government the United States wants to control at any cost, a former prime minister that it fears more than anybody in Imran Khan. These are just some of the images over the past 48 hours as a country descended into chaos, protests, burning government buildings, taking to the streets, burning a lot of government vehicles, going after members of parliaments, members of the government's houses. People taking to the streets saying, down with this government for arresting the former prime minister on trumped up corruption charges that really no one believes other than the opposition party. A country that sits on the verge of civil war. And even though Imran Khan was ousted following an American and UK backed coup after Khan refused sanctions against Russia, the Biden administration, of course, didn't like that. The Biden administration absolutely wants to control this country. So you get a coup. That's exactly what happens when things don't go the United States and UK's way. Oh, they're going to start really aligning themselves with Russia? They're not going to push sanctions on Russia? Coup. You get a coup. Overnight, dozens of protesters were killed by the military as thousands of people took to the streets after this illegal arrest. Here was the moment that Imran Khan was arrested while he was sitting in a courtroom. We've got new video of this that just came in this afternoon. They're smashing the windows, beating him up, dragging him outside, and then marching him down the street. But look at Khan just sort of sitting at the table. He's just like this. Watch this. Imagine looking. He's like, "Huh, there I am in sunglasses. You coming for me? You coming for me?" Unbelievable. I spoke to a number of sources in Pakistan this afternoon who were terrified. Conditions were deteriorating quickly. One source I spoke to lives in a small community outside of the major city, said conditions were really bad. And here's one woman in Pakistan, she's taking to the streets, and she's asking, she was, you know, yelling for the release of Imran Khan and showing her son, saying that if you guys say that Imran Khan is a terrorist, then I bring you my sons and show you that I guess we're also all terrorists because we support Imran Khan. Look at my boys. Then we're all terrorists, she says. She also is asking for the former Prime Minister Nawaz to come out and face the people. Listen to what she says. Look at my boy. Then he's a terrorist. Then he's a terrorist. Then he's a terrorist.
That little boy's like, oh, what are we doing?
Yeah, come out and face us. Come out and face us. Like, all right, mom.
All right, mama mom, bear is that coming
what,
out.
Is that mom, what are we doing today?
I know. She pulls him in front of the camera. He's like, great, what are you doing? And then she starts screaming and he's like, oh.
Yeah.
I don't think this is going to be fun.
So the head of the PMLN, which is the party which is backed by the United States and the UK governments, they're fed up with these people. And of course, the protests destroying government buildings, saying enough is enough. Let Imran out of prison right now. And just a few hours ago, we did get stunning news out of Pakistan that the Pakistani Supreme Court said Imran Khan's arrest was illegal, which was a stunning moment. In fact, it was interesting to hear reports in the courtroom at the Supreme Court when he walked in. According to witnesses, the judge said, "Good to see you," which is not something that judges ever say to.
Sure.
Good to see you.
To defendants.
And all he said was, "We want peace," and that's what and his argument was. I've been in custody. I haven't seen what's been happening to the country. No one's been able to talk to me. No one's come to see me. I've been locked up for 48 hours. I want peace. I want our protests to be peaceful. And the judge says, "Good to see you." And now he's been he must be freed immediately, freed and let out. That this was an illegal arrest. And this is a clear response to the protests, because the protests are saying, we're done. We're absolutely done. We are going to destroy more government buildings. We've had it with this corrupt government. The government has been destroying this country for a long time now. We are sick of it. So cheers broke out all over Pakistan. Here was the moment when Khan was let out of the Supreme Court. You can go ahead and roll it. I think it's just what's shooting the video. So here he is coming down the hallway here in the back. He's in blue. in the back, and he's in under, you know, police custody. So he's freed. Freed is a different definition, I guess, for you and me. So he's freed, but into police custody. So police taking him into custody, even though he's freed. So he, well, the, you know, important thing is he won't spend the night in prison.
But what he had warned in a video that went viral on between Monday and Tuesday was that there had been an attempt on his life, he said, and they are trying to arrest me to keep me from campaigning because elections are coming up in October and he's favored to win. So he's been warning that they were after me. And I guess he was not wrong.
Well, and of course, he believes it's the opposition party. And of course, the opposition party, which is backed by the United States and the UK. So the opposition party, of course, the PMLN, backed by the United States, backed by the British government. He believes, and a lot of the PTI party believe that that was who was going to carry out the assassination attempt. They thought, you know, the thing is, people remember Benazir Bhutto. So Benazir Bhutto, who would have become prime minister, assassinated, shot. There's a history of this, of course. So you go into custody and then you're suddenly killed or hanged, as is the case. And that was, of course, the fear among supporters that that was about to happen in this situation. So he gets out. He's leaving prison. Sources are telling me that this is a huge relief. My sources in Pakistan have been telling me this is a huge relief that they are applauding this release. One source told me that he will become the next prime minister when they hold elections, that this in fact has solidified the popularity of Imran Khan.
Like, oh, that sounds a little familiar.
Yeah. Like you arrest this guy. I mean, does this sound familiar at all? Like you arrest this guy and then now this solidifies.
And then you rile up his base.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That they will hold elections. This will solidify his standing with the people in many ways, making him more powerful. This is Pakistani journalist Shifa Yousafzai outside the Supreme Court showing the large police presence. So as he's being led out of the Supreme Court, here was the large police presence. And I'll sort of summarize what she's saying here. She says, these are scenes outside the Supreme Court today when Imran Khan was inside the court. A large number of police and rangers were present there, she describes them. And the court barred supporters, party leaders from coming to the court. All three gates of the Marriott, the Serena Hotels, the Margala Hotels were closed. No one was allowed to enter this zone at all. The media was also barred from the Supreme Court. And there were journalists' names who were added to lists. And also, there was no foreign journalists associated with foreign news media were not allowed to enter at all. So journalists were barred from coming in here and covering this. So a lot of journalists were really angry at their lack of press coverage, that they were barred from going in there, not allowed to get any sort of video and coverage of what was happening there. And so here was the moment. So a lot of questions, right? How free is he actually? And where is he at this hour? So he's freed, but now he's in police custody, and then tomorrow he has to appear in court. Where is he tonight? And here is the moment driving away from the Supreme Court in police officers with police officers. So take a look at this. Is he still in police custody right now? It's unclear where he's going to be spending the night. And is he safe? Right. That's the question. A lot of people wondering, is this going to be another Benazir Bhutto moment? He's out now. Will he have security around him? And what will happen? After all, if he was just laying claim to an assassination attempt just a short time ago, it's a country in turmoil, but a country that's happy. Many, of course, his supporters are happy that he's out. The opposition part, this is an interesting part of the story. The PMLN, of course, which is backed by the United States, threatened the judiciary this afternoon. So this is making the rounds on Pakistani television this afternoon. A lot of people shocked that the information minister, Maryam Aurangzeb, threatened the judges who freed Imran Khan. Aurangzeb. It's hard for me to say. Maryam Aurangzeb is the information minister, basically saying that if judges go against Imran Khan, his protesters will come to their houses and destroy their houses, too, because a number of government buildings have been destroyed and government, members of the PMLN party have their houses destroyed in this. So judges, you better put him back in prison or the protesters are going to come to your house and you're next. Basically threatening the judges in Pakistani television.
And like, pretending that the protesters are protesting for his arrest?
No. But she's saying like, hey, these guys are nuts. Like these PTI, his supporters are crazy. basically calling him a terrorist. Basically, these people are terrorists is what she's saying. So you better put him back in prison. Does this sound familiar at all?
I don't understand that.
What don't you understand?
Because obviously they're protesting for his release, right, and they got their way. So why would they then punish a judge that gave them their way?
This is the opposition.
Right. So she should. How is she saying that these people who got their way are then going to retaliate? Right. It doesn't make sense. It's a stupid argument is what I'm saying.
Exactly.
I believe you, but it holds no water.
But here she is. So here's what she said in real quick. Just play this part.
आप करें फैसला इसके खिलाफ किसी का घर नहीं बचेगा.
Yeah, that basically, you know, that these people, that he's a terrorist and, you know, they're going to come for you. They're going to come for you next, basically. So that's the PMLN. This is far from over as the military has to decide who, you know, where they're going to fall on this. Imran Khan has been critical of the army. This is not new. And the PMLN, of course, is backed by the United States. It's backed by the UK government. And so the international community and all of this, it's been stunning. The international community has been totally silent on this. Nothing from the United States. Nothing from the United States. Here's the White House clown, Jean-Pierre, saying it's simply a Pakistani matter. We don't care that he's been arrested. It's Pakistan for them to deal with.
What's the White House's reaction to Imran Khan's arrest in Pakistan?
So just a couple of things I'd like to say about that.
Let me just go to my notes. Let me read what I have to say here. I have a couple of things I really want to say, but I don't know what they are, so I have to look them up in my little book. Hold on a second.
Not briefed on that.
As you know, we're aware of the arrest of former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan. As we have said before, the United States does not have a position on one political candidate or party versus another. We call for the respect of democratic principles and the rule of law around the world. So I would refer you to the government of Pakistan for any further information on that.
Wait.
Just ask Juan Guaido how we adhere to that.
Wait. We invade entire countries in the name of free and fair elections.
Yeah.
So if
I was going to say
one candidate is arrested, that's cool.
If what she said is true, this would be actually an historic moment where the U.S. has finally decided to let people decide their own fate without our influence.
Right.
Well, good job, everybody. Good job.
Yeah. Corinne, can I ask a follow-up question? So when you guys fomented a coup in that country where you literally wanted Imran Khan to be arrested and or probably assassinated, is that before or after you guys decided to not be involved in other countries' business anymore? Just curious, like where on the timeline that falls.
I mean, one of the major talking points of invading, Syria, Iraq, were no free and fair elections. We didn't think people were Egypt, right? Those were not free and fair elections.
The reason we're at war with Russia, the United States is actively at war with Russia, so is NATO, is because we want to spread democracy, make sure that democracy stands in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, but there, it's all good.
Facebook
let them.
Ads.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they ran some Facebook ads.
Yeah, and interfered
well,
in the election.
Well, the Pakistanis are not doing that because their internet was taken down and access to many social media sites so that they couldn't continue to bolster these protests.
Christine Peach in our chat says, wow, I didn't hear about this on the morning news this morning. Surprise, surprise. Yeah, you won't hear about this at all in the Western media. You won't hear about this story at all. And you certainly won't hear about the fact that the United States and the UK were responsible for a destabilizing coup, which pulled Imran Khan from office. You won't hear any of that, of course, because how the imperial media runs things.
If you want to know like the U.S. stance on it, I mean, if you look at you're talking about a potential civil war breaking out in a nuclear power, which there are very few of on the planet. And like that was like page 45 of her notes when she got asked that question. You could tell she wasn't like it wasn't like right there top of mind. It was at the bottom of the pile.
Can you rerun that video? So this was the first question that she was asked at the press conference yesterday. The first question. So I'm good for this reporter for having this be the very first question of the day that's getting asked here. Watch this.
What's the White House's reaction to Imran Khan's arrest in Pakistan?
So just a couple of things I'd like to say about that.
Let me go to the back of my binder, because I didn't think anyone was going to ask me about Pakistan today, but I've got it here printed out.
Yeah, she's flipping like thick stacks of papers
back. As you know, we're aware of the arrest of former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan. As we have said before, the United States does not have a position on one political candidate or party versus another. We call for the respect of democratic principles and the rule of law around the world. So yeah. I would refer you to the government of Pakistan for any further information on that.
That's great news. We mind our own business. Wonderful.
The back of the book is the war machine, is like the tab. So it's W's. That's why it's way
to
the back.
Go back to the back. Yeah, I thought this was a very important story for us to lead off with tonight. Pakistan. No one else is talking about this. Our friend George Galloway, apparently the only other, and you know, again, the mainstream media is not talking about this at all. You have to go to independent media, good for George for covering this story. And you know, I felt it was important for us to cover it here because the UK government doesn't think that it's important either. Rishi Sunak also on the floor of Parliament saying this about Pakistan. He's echoing, they're on the same playbook. He must have read Jean-Pierre's notes because they're literally on the same playbook about how we handle Pakistan. We destabilize them in a coup, but when we're asked about Imran Khan's arrest, it's up to them. Listen to Rishi Sunak.
The UK, of course, has a long-standing and close relationship with Pakistan, and this weekend, especially as Commonwealth partners. The arrest of the former Prime Minister is an internal matter for Pakistan. We support peaceful, democratic processes and adherence to the rule of law, and we are monitoring the situation carefully.
Wait. He was like, they were at our party this weekend, so yeah. That's why, like, because they showed up as Commonwealth partners at the King's coronation.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, they're all good because they were at our party this weekend.
Right, the Prime Minister was here.
It might be burning, but they showed up for our party, so all good. They do what they want.
The puppet Prime Minister was here visiting us. Perhaps the real Prime Minister, who was ousted because of our coup, couldn't be here. He's in prison. But it's totally up to them. Literally reading from the same Jean-Pierre playbook. I love this. I love this tweet. In follow-up to that, Rishi Sunak says, here's a tweet that says, oh, everything else is your problem, and you'll stick your nose into it. But a Pakistani prime minister being arrested who is against you controlling Pakistan is their internal matter. Wow. You didn't even try to hide your hypocrisy, Rishi. Yeah. So because they don't want to align with the West and the warmongering ways, and they don't want to put sanctions on Russia, that's why you fomented a coup, and that's why you're not interested in talking with them or even acknowledging the presence and what's going on in Pakistan. So I'd love to hear your comments on this. Drop a comment below. We've got more news to get to here on this Thursday.
It would also be interesting to see what Eastern leaders are saying about this. So that's something we should follow up over the weekend as well and see if they have a different position.
Absolutely. We've got more news to get to here on the show. We're going to look at why is the United States saying that it will bomb Taiwan, yes, bomb Taiwan in order to make it undesirable if China decides to invade that country. We're going to bomb Taiwan Semiconductor. You know where all the chips come from? We're going to do that. And Taiwan is not happy about that. And they will defend themselves against the United States. What in the world are we dealing with? What kind of clown world? And that comes right from the mouth of a U.S. congressman. So we'll dive into that story. Plus, Bud Light has much bigger problems than Dylan Mulvaney. Oh, yes. We're going to uncover the problems that InBev out of Belgium. It's not an American company. It used to be. So big problems for Anheuser-Busch. We're going to get into all of that. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends that are a nutrition company for your pets. Now, you may have heard the expression that food can be the best medicine or the slowest poison. Well, of course, that's true for your pet as well. Your pet's a member of the family, so don't feed them like they're in the doghouse. Give them Nom Nom. Nom Nom delivers fresh dog food with every portion personalized to your dog's needs so you can bring out their best. Nom Nom is made with real whole food that you can see and recognize without any additives or fillers that contribute to bloating and low energy. That's because Nom Nom uses the latest science and insights to make real good food for dogs. These nutrient-packed recipes are crafted by board-certified veterinarians. and nutritionist made fresh and shipped free to your door. Nom Nom's already delivered to over 40 million meals to good dogs like yours, inspiring millions of clean bowls and tail wags. You know, we love just always giving our dogs food that they can recognize. They get so excited by this. Plus, Nom Nom comes with a money-back guarantee. If your dog's tail isn't wagging within 30 days, Nom Nom will refund your first order. There's no fillers, no nonsense. So right now, you can treat your pet to 50% off your no-risk two-week trial at trynom.com/redacted. It's written there in red. Once again, that's trynom.com/redacted for 50% off. That's trynom.com/redacted.
Well, Taiwan is not happy with the United States. You might even say they're pissed off at the United States. After a member of the United States Congress said that it was under consideration that they might bomb Taiwan's semiconductor plants, you know, the place where we get all of the chips in the world to run our computers, that the United States would consider bombing Taiwan Semiconductor if China invades Taiwan. Wrap your head around this crazy story. And does it have anything to do with Nancy Pelosi many months ago going to Taiwan and meeting with Taiwan Semiconductor? Oh, man, let's peel this onion back. Dan Cohen is following this story for us from Washington, D.C. Dan Cohen is our redacted correspondent from Washington, D.C. Dan, good to see you. Try to help us understand what kind of craziness members of Congress are saying today.
Well, Clayton, the Taiwanese Minister of National Defense had some choice words for the U.S. following the latest suggestion that Washington will actually bomb the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, the TSMC, its fabrication plants in Taiwan in the event of a Chinese invasion. The minister said that Taiwan's armed forces would not tolerate any destruction, the destruction of any Taiwanese facility, and that the armed forces are responsible for defending Taiwan and its people, materials, and strategic resources. So the Taiwanese Minister of Defense talking about defending itself from the United States, really remarkable. So that statement came in response to comments from Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton, who was on the House Select Committee on China. Watch this.
You know, one of the interesting ideas that's floated out there for deterrence is just making it very clear to the Chinese that if you invade Taiwan, we're going to blow up TSMC. I just throw that out, not because that's necessarily the best strategy, but because it's an example out there. And of course, the Taiwanese really don't like this idea, right?
Notice he was interrupted, and there was pushback from his fellow panelist, Michelle Flournoy, the longtime Pentagon official who nearly became the first female Secretary of Defense, breaking the glass ceiling with a bomb, I guess. She pushes back and says that blowing up the TSMC is a crazy idea, but then Seth Moulton actually further confirms that this plan is being actively discussed.
Can I have a little inter-party dispute here on the blowing up TSMC? If you do that, you have a $2 trillion economic impact on the global economy within the first year, and you'd put manufacturing around the world at a standstill. I mean, this is a terrible idea.
I'm not promoting the idea. I'm not promoting the idea, Michelle.
You're just saying
What I'm saying is these are some of the things that are actually actively being debated amongst U.S. policymakers.
So Moulton is not the first official to bring this up publicly. Former National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, who was served as National Security Advisor for three administrations, he made headlines in March when he publicly said that in the event of a war over Taiwan, that the U.S. should blow up the semiconductor fabrication plants so China can't take them over. There's also an infamous U.S. Army War College paper from 2021 saying, quote, the United States and Taiwan should lay plans for a targeted scorched earth strategy that would render Taiwan not just unattractive if ever seized by force, but positively costly to maintain. This could be done most effectively by threatening to destroy the facilities belonging to the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. And then, of course, there was the viral satirical tweet from our buddy Garland Nixon about U.S. plans for the destruction of Taiwan. That tweet was taken seriously in Taiwan and in China. So because of all of this, the Council on Foreign Relations, the premier Washington think tank, this week published a paper discouraging public discussion of blowing up the TSMC plant in Taiwan because, quote, discussion of destroying Taiwan's most famous industry and the source of much pride among Taiwanese is a gift to Chinese Communist Party propagandists, and that, quote, the notion that one needs to destroy Taiwan in order to save it is also likely to undermine the willingness of Taiwanese people to resist. While this discussion of blowing up the TSMC's fabrication plant in Taiwan is going on, the TSMC is currently building a massive plant in Arizona. We have exclusive footage of this plant. It sits on a 1,129-acre plot of land on the outskirts of the Phoenix metropolitan area near a suburb called Anthem. So you can see the construction is underway. It's far along in the process. The TSMC announced this plant in May 2020 with a pledge of $12 billion. And this was under some kind of pressure from the Trump administration. Then National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, who more recently made the comments about blowing up the Taiwan plant, actually flew to Arizona in June 2020 to congratulate then-Governor Doug Ducey on the TSMC plant. Fast forward to August 22, then House Speaker Nancy Pelosi flies to Taiwan and meets with TSMC executives. Days later, Congress passes the CHIPS Act, which provides $52 billion in subsidies to encourage chip manufacturers to build in the U.S. In December, TSMC said it would spend $40 billion on the Arizona plant. So it sure appears that there's some pressure from Pelosi there. Now, the New York Times published a really fascinating piece this past February showing that the TSMC Arizona plant that they're building is basically a boondoggle. This is direct quote from the article. TSMC said the U.S. construction could be at least four times the cost in Taiwan, driven by labor expenses, permits, regulatory compliance, and inflation. It quotes the chairman of the private equity firm Kirkland Capital, Kirk Yang, who says that TSMC's investment in the U.S. from a business perspective makes no sense at all. And he adds that the TSMC might have been forced to set up a factory in the U.S. because of political considerations. So, you know, hinting that that Pelosi trip and the Trump administration before that basically twisted the arm of the TSMC into spending tens of billions of dollars on this Arizona fabrication plant. And I would expect that the New York Times is basically understating the whole thing. There's another article in an outlet called FDI Intelligence that says that the TSMC is building the plant in order to placate the U.S., so further hinting that this is a result of pressure from Washington. It quotes Scott and W. Jones, the president of cost modeling company IC Knowledge, says that the fact that there are no specifics about a site and the start date is so far out makes me think this is an announcement of a fab they hope they never have to build. That was back in 2020. Clearly, that we're much further along. This thing is well under construction. And there are all kinds of other major problems identified in the New York Times piece. It says that TSMC also needs suppliers close by to provide the Arizona plant with raw materials, equipment, and critical parts. Yet some suppliers are trying to join it, they said they were experiencing labor challenges and high costs. And it adds that some TSMC engineers said they were concerned about how the Arizona factory would blend American and Taiwanese employees, and that in Taiwan, engineers work long hours and weekend shifts, joking that they will sell liver to work for the chip manufacturer. Such sacrifices may be less appealing to employees in the U.S. And it also adds that the most difficult thing about wafer manufacturing is not technology. The most difficult thing is personnel management. Americans are the worst at this because Americans are the most difficult to manage. And finally, the other major flaw in this whole plan, well, Apple CEO Tim Cook said in highly publicized statements that Apple will use chips from the TSMC Arizona plant, but that plant will only be capable of producing chips for older, outdated Apple products. None of the new iPhones, not your iPhone 15 or the A or M series computers, which are the top of the line. So this plant, at best, will be several years behind the Taiwanese plants, which the U.S. is considering bombing anyway.
It is an unbelievable story. I mean, so the United States, in order to make Taiwan less attractive, will bomb Taiwan Semiconductor. But hey, Nancy Pelosi's worked out a deal. You'll bring your Taiwan Semiconductor plant to Arizona, and we'll set up a version of it here because we're planning to bomb that one. And you and I were talking beforehand. It almost sounds crazy, but then when you think about it in terms of Nord Stream, the Nord Stream pipeline bombing, we hear from President Biden that they plan to take out Nord Stream from a number of members, Victoria Nuland and others, of the Biden administration. And then the Nord Stream pipeline is destroyed. So they're telling us their plans, that we will, in fact, bomb the Taiwan Semiconductor plant. So it sounds absurd and preposterous, but they're planning on doing this. This could lead to a catastrophic problem worldwide with global chip shortages. We saw what happened during the pandemic. And to your point, in Arizona, you know, the United States has 1 million open manufacturing jobs. They're open right now. You can go and get a job in manufacturing. Americans don't want these jobs. They do not want these jobs. So we're going to have how many thousands of Taiwanese are going to relocate to the United States in order to work in this plant? Because the Americans aren't going to work in this plant. So what are they going to do? This thing is going to like sit vacant down there. I mean, are there job postings yet for this plant? Have you been able to uncover any sort of, you know, they're hiring thousands of people right now, or is this thing just sitting there?
Yeah, I mean, they are hiring people, but, you know, whether they're able to actually replicate the incredibly complex and advanced processes that are done in Taiwan. I mean, this isn't, you know, like a teddy bear factory where you just, you know, put stuffing in it and stick the head on and onto the conveyor belt. This right. is one of the most complex processes, manufacturing processes in the world. And because the U.S. has, of course, outsourced it over the decades, it's become located in Taiwan. This is totally specialized. And there's a certain, I mean, you know, like we're talking about, there's a certain cultural thing that the U.S. just doesn't have, where, you know, in order to do this, we have too many labor requirements and sort of regulations in the United States where this has to be done overseas for it to be successful. And they need that basically like sweatshop labor. And so to just say one day, oh, we're just going to transport that back to the United States, all the evidence shows that it's not going to work.
It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. This idea of bringing manufacturing back to the United States, that ship has sailed. It's not going to happen. And I'm also like at a 30,000 foot level. This is the United States admitting openly that they are going to be involved in a war with China. Like, we're going to bomb Taiwan if China invades. We will be actively involved. I mean, I know President Biden said that in 60 Minutes interview, that we will actively be involved. We will send men and women, American men and women, to fight China if Taiwan is attacked. So this is yet another confirmation of a future conflict with China.
Exactly. That's what the U.S. is planning for. You know, they don't care about having some, you know, aircraft carriers sitting at the bottom of the sea with, you know, tens of thousands, whatever, American soldiers going with it. They don't care about the enormous humanitarian catastrophe that people will suffer in Taiwan, so much for caring about the Taiwanese, let alone mainland China or anywhere else. So it's just total catastrophe is what the U.S. is planning on. And it's not as if this is a two-way street. Like, the U.S. isn't, you know, looking at, China is not looking at like Florida or like Long Island. You know, we're gonna take Long Island and, you know, send our military and our officials there and recognize its independence. So this is totally just U.S. aggression against China in Asia. It's completely insane.
Well, just all I got to say is watch Nancy Pelosi's stocks. If she suddenly sells her stocks in these chip companies, that's probably an indication that something is about to happen. That's a telltale sign from Nancy Pelosi. She's an excellent stock picker. Dan Cohen, thank you for following this crazy story for us. And you heard it here first. We'll see. Now we have it on record, their plans to bomb this thing. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Clayton.
Unbelievable.
Jeez, that's like a jealous ex. If I can't have you, nobody can.
That's crazy.
Their entire lifetime television for women plots that are just like that.
In that analogy, though, because they built that plant in Arizona, that's like, you know, getting mad at your ex. And then if I can't have you, nobody can. I'll take your sister, who wasn't as good, but I'll take your sister, and then nobody right. can have you.
Ooh, you should join the shit, man. Yeah. They should hire you during the writer's strike. Go and write for TV.
And if you go like on Indeed.com and you look at like the job postings, yeah, there are like 61 jobs posted for Taiwan Semiconductor in Arizona right now. But a lot of them are like managerial level, like kind of higher up level, factory manager, manager of the main area, water resource manager, environmental manager. So they're hiring at the high level. It'll really be interesting to see like the thousands of actual manufacturing jobs and what that entails. We'll be keeping our eye on the story. I'm fascinated by this. I just love that they're openly telling us we're going to bomb that. When it comes to Nord Stream, we know how that ends.
Yeah.
We've got more news to get to here on the show. Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch has a much bigger problem on its hands than just Dylan Mulvaney and that failed ad campaign that sent their stock plummeting and people pouring Bud Light down the toilet, and no one's going to buy Bud Light ever again. First of all, it's awful, but secondly, of what just happened. But now the internal documents from Anheuser-Busch tell a totally different story about the lies they've been telling about, oh, this was just an ad campaign, a failed ad campaign. Wait till you see the documents. We're going to go through all of that. But first, we want to tell you about private internet access. You know, it's amazing right now as governments clamp down, try to prevent you from getting online. We're seeing that right now in Pakistan, for crying out loud. We were seeing that, of course, what was happening in Texas as well. And so that's why it's so important to make sure that you've got a VPN. And that's what private internet access is. Private internet access is a leading VPN provider that works with all major streaming services so that you can access more content than anything you want that you've ever had in the world. So if you want to access content that's unavailable to you in your location, that's why you need private internet access. If you want to be safe and secure when you're surfing, browsing, your banking information, all of that, that's why you need private internet access. And right now, an 83% discount. That's right. So if you want to enjoy all the benefits of private internet access, now's the time to subscribe. Head to piavpn.com/redacted and get an 83% discount. Seriously, 83%. It's just $2.03 a month. Also, you get 4 months extra completely for free. But you have to go to that URL, piavpn.com/redacted. And it's amazing. I mean, we use VPN all the time, all day, every day. We use our VPN to be able to access different websites, news sites that you can't get inside of the country that you're located in. There's certain websites that are totally blocked for you because of censorship and what these tyrannical governments are doing to people. For instance, our Rumble viewers who are in France right now, you're blocked. You can't watch us on Rumble in France, but many of you do because you're using a VPN. So that's how you get around it. Right now, check them out. piavpn.com/redacted. Get 83% off. Give them a try today. It's a leading VPN provider that works with all of the major streaming services. So our thanks to them for supporting Redacted.
All right. I'm enjoying the chat because when we bring out Bud Light, people have funny things to say. Atlanta Bill says Bud Light tastes like raw eggs.
Raw eggs. I mean, Bud Light is awful. It really is. It's not. It was, you know, it was never good to begin with, and now it's even worse. But
you know, I appreciated this chat from Keros. Said Bud Light denigrated women, and men stood up on their behalf. I hadn't seen it like that. In that way, you can kind of say it's a romantic story for men who are like, this is not what a woman is, and you know, I'm not going to drink this beer that I normally do, because I think that this is harmful. I don't know how, you know.
I didn't mean to skip ahead.
How deliberate that all is. No, we're gonna get to it. But anyway.
But did you have the video in here of the men, the video from the 90s?
I did not include that.
I will pull that up because that's an amazing Bud Light commercial showing these men dressing up as women trying to sneak into a pool tournament to get free beer. And the guy has a mustache and
right, back when it was jokey, like so they were literally bosom buddies.
They were literally doing the opposite of this. But anyway, yeah, let's talk about Bud Light and the disaster that is, but it's not just about the Dylan Mulvaney story. It's much, much worse.
Right. Bud Light is not able to just ride out this transgender storm because the company's stock has now been downgraded by HSBC because the company says that they have deeper problems than ABI admits. ABI is Anheuser-Busch, InBev. The InBev company is the owner of Anheuser-Busch. It's a Belgian company that bought Anheuser-Busch in 2008 for $52 billion. Now, just a reminder that Bud Light brought this upon themselves when they practiced stakeholder capitalism. That is when a business decides that it will get involved in dictating the way public life should be instead of letting the voters decide through a democracy. It never works, and it shouldn't work that way unless you like the idea of rich people and rich corporations dictating the way you live, in which case this is not a show for you. Why are you here if you like stakeholder capitalism? You can go follow Bill Gates. The rest of you who don't like stakeholder capitalism may remember that this, what we're talking about now, is transgender influencer Dylan Mulvaney on a can of Budweiser with a marketing partnership. It was to celebrate Mulvaney's 365th day of being a woman. We women call that our first birthday. And we don't celebrate with beer. Usually it's breast milk. But I don't want to give these people any ideas. So people who do not want to validate a biological man as a woman are upset about this campaign. And Bud Light keeps trying to smooth things over without a real apology. And it is not working. Take a look at this map showing Bud Light sales down by region. The biggest drop is through the mountain states in the center. But as Fox Business breaks this down for us, we're going to watch. They point out that it is down across all states, red states, blue states, despite political leaning of any region. Watch.
Obvious question, where did they fall the most?
In the mountain area, the Rocky really? Mountain area, where they're down 29%. But look at this. The entire country down double digits, including an 18% decline in California, Oregon, and Washington State, and 14% in our parts. This is a major backlash.
But if you look at that map, yeah. It bears no relationship to Democrat or Republican states.
No, it's all down.
Bud Light sales are down everywhere, and regardless of politics.
It's not just Bud Light. It's Anheuser-Busch's other beer brands that are getting caught up in this too, like Bud Regular, Bud Heavy. Those sales are down. Natty Ice, down. HSBC downgraded the stock. They says this marketing blunder is a crisis and the problems are deeper than they're admitting. And do you remember that old Budweiser commercial, Budweiser?
Yes.
With the frogs?
I do.
The guy in charge of that spoke to the New York Post. His name is Robert Lackey. He's now ripping his former company and the management team there for not only the bad call using Dylan Mulvaney for their advertisements, but also, he says, a complete lack of corporate oversight in doing so.
Okay. First of all, I didn't know that there was a thing called Bud Heavy. I guess it's the difference of Bud Light.
It's funny because is what Clayton was saying about like how bad Bud Light is. Natty Ice is basically like beer that, like, if you had somebody describe beer to a demon and they had that demon go and brew beer, that would be Natty Ice, in my opinion. That's how much I like that.
Going back to, Bud Ice and Bud Nat. Yeah, what is it? Natty Ice. We used to call it. Yeah, if going back to University of Pittsburgh days and parties, and it was like the cheapest garbage beer that you could afford. You know, as college kids, we would just get the cheapest garbage, and that's what it was. Like, you weren't drinking it like, wow, this is really good, a Sam Adams or a Yingling Lager.
So then, for you guys, it's a little Schadenfreude, right? You're like, this beer sucks, and we're enjoying watching it suffer.
Well, personally, yeah, because I can't stand bad beer. Like, if I'm going to have a beer, like, I want it to be a good beer. And I feel like I also don't like the garbage stuff. Like, they would go on Fox News and pretend to be an American company, and they're not, right?
Okay.
So they would do all this like American marketing and sort of fake patriotism stuff, and they would put out like their American flag cans and their American flag like boxes and things like that, and they would be like, yeah, drink American beer. It's like, you're a Belgium company. I don't know where, how is this an American?
Nice cowboy boots, though.
Yeah, nice fake patriotism.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Which brings us to the question, why won't Bud Light just apologize? The reason is, if they do that, it would be a sorry, not sorry, because gender ideology and what we're just going to call woke politics, for lack of a better term, is woven into the very fabric of who they are. They literally can't apologize in an authentic way because, as the Daily Wire's Michael Knowles points out, they are a woke company. Here's what Knowles found in InBev's 2022 ESG report. ESG is like how they, you know, say that they are environmental, social, global, that they are, you know, basically a stakeholder capital.
That they're type a woke company. Yeah.
Yes. Because we've talked many times about how ESG is BS.
Total garbage. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not really a measure of anything other than sort of social capital that you can share on Twitter and feel good about yourself. They acknowledge in their 2022 ESG report that they pay for gender-affirming medical support for their employees. Here's a screenshot from that manual. We have introduced inclusive benefits such as gender-affirming medical support for transgender colleagues in the U.S. and Canada, and financial and legal support for name changes for colleagues in Brazil and Colombia. So that means by gender-affirming care, they are paying for medical sex changes and cross-hormone pharmaceuticals, basically. They also make their managers go through diversity training, and they put that on their suppliers, too. See where he has underlined, trained our buyers and suppliers on this D&I supplier strategy, and all managers receive unconscious bias training.
Oh, so this is systemic. This isn't just Dylan Mulvaney. This is company-wide.
And they cover transgender family services, too, so that a newborn baby can be adopted into a family like this. This also is from their manual. For transgender colleagues, Labatt offers a gender affirmation benefit, and in 2022, a family forming benefit was introduced to provide partial coverage for fertility, surrogacy, and adoption costs. The Brewer also offers a 4-week to return to policy for caregivers returning on parental leave. So, you know, a newborn baby can get a family like that through Budweiser, which is what, you know, is what they think their employees want and need. So I wanted to make a point about, I received an email from someone who had worked for JP Morgan Chase after the financial censorship story that we did yesterday about how JP Morgan Chase is all in on transgender causes, but will cancel your account if you're a Christian because they think you're a terrorist. They literally associate Christianity with hate groups and terrorism now. We showed those documents yesterday. And this woman said, you know, I've sat through so many of these inclusivity and unconscious bias type things where they tell you you're a racist, you have privilege you don't know about, that kind of thing. And it's just nauseating for people to be told this and subjected to this just for a paycheck.
It's unbelievable. So she works at JP Morgan Chase and told you this.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
So I appreciate her sharing that. Now, not only that about InBev, but they are a part of an advertising group that have come together called GARM, G-A-R-M. It stands for Global Alliance for Responsible Media. They include Adidas, BP, CBS, Goldman Sachs, MasterCard, McDonald's, Merck, Nike, P&G, Procter & Gamble, Hershey's, Disney, Unilever, Walmart. What this is, by their own admission, is a cross-industry initiative established by the World Federation of Advertisers to address the challenge of harmful content on digital media platforms and its monetization via advertising, meaning they want to make sure that no advertisers or their buddies sponsor anything that they can call wrong think, anything that they don't like. And what is it they think is harmful content? Well, you guessed it, gender ideology. You know, they say no hateful speech against gender, sexual orientation, age, ability, all of those things. You know, nothing that's insensitive, no debated social issues. So again, a show like this is out because I'm someone who's going to say that, you know, I cannot go along with all the way with gender ideology to the point where it puts biological males in single-sex spaces with my daughters, or biological females in single-sex spaces with my sons. I'm a woman saying no thank you. And that means that my show, by these standards, would be ineligible for sponsorship from InBev, Adidas, Merck, MasterCard, all of those things, right? Because they have come together to say, we're going to make sure that these platforms don't make ad revenue, but we're going to make sure these platforms who are good dogs have lots of money and lots of voice and lots of reach. You know, you want that free speech so badly, it sounds like they're making sure that there's no ad revenue around people who want to practice free speech. If you think that sounds like an antitrust violation, you're on the mark here, because Representative Jim Jordan agrees with you. He has asked GARM and the World Federation of Advertisers, WFA, to produce documents about this, and they've ignored it up until now. So they earned themselves a nice little subpoena dated May 5th. Here's what it says. According to publicly available information, GARM and the WFA appear to facilitate collusion among their members in a manner that may violate U.S. antitrust law. To advance our oversight and inform potential legislation related to these collusive practices, the committee must understand whether, how, and to what extent GARM and WFA facilitate collusion to prevent certain content from benefiting from advertising dollars and to reduce that content's presence online. So, given that this InBev is in this satanic group of censorship, GARM, and they are committed internally to gender ideology, how can Bud Light even begin to apologize for this? It would be a sorry, not sorry. Even if we hear those words as consumers, we would know they are empty. So again, every time we talk about Bud Light, we have to bring back this word. Bud Light is in a state of Zugzwang, which is a German word that's very fun to use, means when it's your turn to play and all of your moves are bad.
Right. So, because if they want to deny that, like, they want to just blame the thing on Dylan Mulvaney, like, oh, that was an ad company that did that. It's almost like Balenciaga. Oh, it's just an ad company, just their mistake. We don't really adhere to this at all. But then you start to go through the company's documents, you really and see their relationship with GARM. You see all of this internal company documentation and policies. You're like, no. This was all part of the plan.
Yeah. Okay, so you can't say sorry that a campaign upset people, but we adhere to gender ideology internally. You have to say, okay, we do no politics, right? And we never will again, and we're sorry that we tried that and that was wrong. That's really the only thing they can say, because otherwise it's still woven into the fabric
That's a great
of who
point.
They are.
That's a great point. They could come out here. I'm just curious, guys, in the chat. I mean, first of all, Bud Light's beer is, I mean, awful, right? The company's...
You've made this point.
Yeah, I just want to make that point again, that their beer is awful. But they could come out and they could come out on camera and say, we screwed up. We've been a company that has gone off the deep end. We've made this list of mistakes. We've gone full bore on gender affirming care. We've gone full woke and stakeholder capitalism. We've fallen for the ESG nonsense. We've done all of these awful things and made huge mistakes. And guess what? Starting today, we're scrapping all of it. We totally failed you. And also our beer sucks, so we're going to start making new beer. That would literally be the only way that would save them.
Yeah, they have to say, we will no longer practice. We renounce stakeholder capitalism. It seemed like a cool thing to do for well-intentioned people.
Because Bill Gates was telling us to do it. Klaus Schwab was telling us to do it. So we went along with Klaus.
It was at Davos, all over the Davos a schedule this year.
Greta Thunberg was telling us.
We realize it's not a good idea for us to dictate society. We are a company. You should either choose our beer or not.
Dean,
and we should leave ideology out of this.
Dean Thompson in the chat says, Clayton, that's also known as up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
I mean, I don't care about an apology. No one asked me what I want, but I don't want an apology from Bud Light. What I really want is for people to drink water so that alcohol stops destroying families and bodies.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
But I also want a commitment from all of these companies not to practice stakeholder capitalism.
I agree with you. And so can I show this now?
Oh, sure.
So yeah. This is from the 1990s. This has been making the rounds over the past week or so. It was uncovered on Twitter. I think someone first dug it up on Twitter, and then it's been making the rounds. But I found it. I totally remember this advertisement. I can't play the audio of it. I can't play the music because we'll get copyright stricken because there's a popular song. But let me just play the ad here. This is from 1993. This is called Ladies Night by Bud Light. And the conceit of it was, hey, it's ladies' night at the bar, and these guys dress up as ladies with a mustache and go in to get free beer and get, you know, free drinks and get their Bud Light. So back then, it was okay to, like, dress up as a transvestite and basically go in like this and get your free beers.
They were not transvestites. They were imposters.
Imposters, okay.
It was not a... It had nothing to do with transgender. It was a...
Yeah, I don't know what you... Anyway, but my point is...
You could not make that ad today.
Could you make that ad in 2023?
No.
No, I don't think you could make that ad.
Because
it's funny, because I recently had a conversation with my daughter about transvestite, like the how in the 90s that was, like, you know, like I think of, like, Eddie Izzard, who's a comedian that is a self-identified transvestite, which is somebody that is usually heterosexual and dresses in the clothes of the opposite gender. And mm-hmm. So it's like, and I was just like, it's like they just went away. Where did the transvestites go?
Where'd they go? Well, they were all in that Bud Light ad, and they were fired.
So they were not transvestites.
All right, or whatever. Well, what are they then?
No, they were like bosom buddies. They were sort of poking fun of the fact that they were obviously not passing.
Right, yeah, mustache.
Right.
It was funny, yeah.
It was a joke. You couldn't do that now because, you know, the mustache...
Drag, basically.
Yeah, they're just basically in drag.
It's not really drag.
Well, no, when you do a search for that, that's literally like 90s Bud Light drag, and that's the commercial that pops
up.
It's
a caricature. It's not even like anything
that's what drag
that we
is,
see
really,
today.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
You might be right about that. I'll need to think deeper about that. We'll get back to you, I'm sure, because it seems like we're not done talking about Bud Light as much as I'd like to, because I just don't want to hear Clayton say again that he doesn't like it. It's not good here.
Yeah, I really don't like Bud Light.
Okay, stop. beer snob.
Yeah, I know I'm a beer snob. Hey, Philip, the red block, we're going to do that after the D, okay? We'll do that after the D.
Yeah.
FYM. Okay. So we got Whitney Webb. She's going to be joining us next to talk about these Jeffrey Epstein documents. Holy smokes. Wait till you see what she has been diving into. This is the... could arguably be the most disgusting level of Jeffrey Epstein that we just really didn't know about.
Oh, that's a tease.
I know. Can you imagine? Unbelievable. And so we'll get into that. Whitney Webb is going to be joining us on that. Plus, a new vaccine study that is going to make your eyes water. I'll just kind of throw that out there. And you don't want to miss that. Oh, we're going to be talking about that. But first, it is no secret right now. Experts are predicting a recession heading our way. We are in it. Layoffs already happening. The government is ready to print more money, further devaluing the U.S. dollar. We just saw an amazing moment for gold this week, an all-time high. And an unbelievable moment for precious metals, because there's an awareness as these central banks are buying up these precious metals. They're buying up gold. They're buying up silver. They don't want you to have it because they want you to buy their own fiat currencies, but they're buying it. It's so hypocritical. But you can buy it. You can buy it. And our friends at Lear Capital, that's who we go to be able to buy gold and silver coins delivered right to you. But you can also buy them inside of your self-directed IRA. And they set that up. At Lear Capital will help you start purchasing precious metals or converting part of your IRA or your 401k into gold, into silver IRA. So call Lear Capital today at 1-800-613-3557. That's the phone number. Write that down and give them a call. You can actually talk to a human being on the phone. Imagine that in 2023. 1-800-613-3557. And you'll get their free gold kit. So you can just, you know, read it, think it over, look at how investing in precious metals may or may not be right for you. Make a decision. For Natalie and I, it's a huge part of our investing strategy. We own gold, we own silver, and it's a huge part of what we do because we believe in it. And it's held its value for 5,000 years when every government currency in world history has collapsed. So those are, I like those odds. I like that gold and silver has been around for 5,000 years and every government currency in world history has collapsed. I like the odds on the gold and silver side. LearRedacted.com is the website you can go to as well. Just go to LearRedacted.com to learn more. And right now they're giving away $15,000 in free bonus medals with a qualified purchase. So get your free gold and silver investor guide by calling 1-800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. Now to Jeffrey Epstein, where many of you know in 2007 he was busted for sex trafficking. And that quietly went away, he got out of prison, and then it seems like he started a couple of new companies, one of which actually targeted young children in the Virgin Islands, specifically. Whitney Webb is the investigative journalist who's been covering this story, and I want to deep dive this with her today on the show. Whitney, welcome back to the show.
Hey, great to be here.
So this is a crazy story because... So we know about the sex trafficking in 2007. Then after he gets out, he turns his attention to the U.S. Virgin Islands and starts a new company, which I don't think many Americans have any idea about this part of the story. And we're just now starting to learn more and more about this. Can you take us through sort of the high level first, and then we'll dive into the nitty gritty, disgusting details?
Sure. So the company you're talking about here is called Southern Trust, and he had a few other companies tied up with it, including a bank, that were based on the Virgin Islands after he was arrested for sex trafficking in Palm Beach. And so after that happened, he seemed, like you said, to have directed his attention more to the Virgin Islands. And so this company in particular, Southern Trust, was created in 2012. And it describes itself as offering cutting-edge consulting services and as a DNA data mining firm that was trying to find clients specifically among big banks and big pharma. It described itself as sort of a biomedical Google that was trying to use people's genetic sequencing to determine what drugs would work best on them and all sorts of odd things. And even people in the testimony that he gave to this Economic Development Commission in the Virgin Islands were, you know, very awestruck, I guess you could say, by how, you know, unusual the company was framed as being and what its objectives essentially were. And what's particularly important is that in a lawsuit that was filed by Denise George, who is the same attorney general of the Virgin Islands that was fired after filing the Epstein JP Morgan case, she had another case targeting Epstein a few years prior. That lawsuit and also a lawsuit filed by the New York Times referred to Southern Trust as being a key part of Jeffrey Epstein's criminal activities. But as I said earlier, it was founded in 2012. So this is well after he was busted for sex trafficking the first time, and it was not a part of what he was charged with in 2019. So it seems like the Virgin Islands was really the only entity interested in going after him for this particular company, which, as we've mentioned, was based there. So what's interesting is if you look at the testimony, it doesn't explicitly talk about children, but in his testimony to this commission, he says what he wants to do is essentially engage children early on to train them in programming and to run these artificial intelligence servers that are going to power these algorithms. And so the way he apparently did that was by funding a slew of initiatives targeting youth in the Virgin Islands, specifically mentally ill youth and underprivileged and poor children. And a lot of the those activities are eerily similar to the same ways that he recruited minors, underage girls in the United States, targeting underprivileged, economically underprivileged teenage girls and gifted children in music and the arts. And there's been no interest really in looking into this story among mainstream media, because why would someone, a known pedophile, be engaged in this type of activity? And we know now from the recent Wall Street Journal revelations that banks, prominent banks like the Edmund de Rothschild Group, was giving Southern Trust millions and millions of dollars in contracts. And it's just a very disturbing and overlooked story, and might shed some light on why the U.S. Virgin Islands, unlike a lot of jurisdictions in the U.S., are interested in going after a lot of the powerful people that enabled Epstein, particularly billionaires and some of these big banks.
It's crazy. It's truly disturbing. I mean, absolutely disturbing. It sounds like something out of a, like, you know, like a Bond villain. Like, if you were to write this as part of a movie, people would say, no, this is ridiculous. You're going to have a billionaire is going to go to the Virgin Islands. He's going to seek out children in order to do biomedical research, implanting things in their brains. Yeah. And even in his testimony, I've gone through these documents that you've sent over. You know, he talks about autistic children specifically. I think like a quarter of them were autistic as well. And did
looking
any of the
for
parents
kids on the spectrum? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So looking specifically for kids on the spectrum, did you get any insights into why he was doing that?
I think maybe what he was looking for were, you know, I think people are probably familiar with the sort of savant characteristics of some autistic people. And mm-hmm. he may have been looking for, children and teens that sort of had those unusual abilities, but it's definitely very disturbing. And something he talks about in his testimony, this Virgin Island Commission, is the idea of how he aggressively wants to genetically sequence the islander population because it's such an isolated community, and then talks about how those gene, that genetic information can be used to determine how to educate these children that he wants to recruit to ostensibly work for his company in coding and programming. But again, as I mentioned earlier, he's targeting specifically underprivileged children, which is very disturbing in light of the similarities between that and what he was doing as part of his sex trafficking operation with Ghislaine Maxwell.
So there's the Epstein piece of this, of course, but then there's, you know, he wasn't operating in a vacuum. You mentioned some of the associations that he's had with the different banks and the funding and sort of thing. But where do these tentacles lead? We know that the Virgin Islands has been struggling to subpoena Larry Page, Google's Larry Page, as part of the Epstein lawsuit. You've written extensively about J.P. Morgan Chase, of course, and Jamie Dimon putting up money, making sure that they were funding. So do we know specifically about this Southern Trust, like what other people were actively involved in it? You mentioned Rothschilds, but anybody else, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation? I saw those names, of course, popping up again in the testimony.
So the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, I didn't see pop up in this testimony specifically, but it does pop up in some of his simultaneous efforts to finance education, not just in the Virgin Islands, but in the United States.
Sorry, let me clarify. It wasn't in the testimony, but it was as part of this education process in the Virgin Islands. Yes.
Yeah, so he was specifically trying to target a lot of the same areas that Bill Gates's philanthropy hits, not just science, but also education. And a lot of these old press releases refer to Epstein as a prominent education patron and things of that nature. And, you know, in some of my past work, I was able to show that back in 1998, he was going to places like Russia, looking at high schools, visiting high schools and apparently elementary schools, looking for kids that were talented in science and math. And some of these pictures of him in these Russian classrooms, the only kid that's there looks like he's 8 or 9. He's just a single kid alone with Epstein and some of these other scientists that he was close to in the room. And, you know, what it really disturbs me that no one has, you know, really bothered to look at this or scrutinize this in any capacity. And as far as Google and like Larry Page and Sergey Brin, so both of the Google co-founders are being subpoenaed by the U.S. Virgin Islands in connection with their investigations into Epstein. Larry Page is apparently so concerned about being served papers that he can't be found. They're trying to go through Alphabet, Google's parent company, because he's still on the board of Alphabet, to try and get access to him that way. But he really does not want to have to testify in this case. And that should be really telling. And in the context of Southern Trust, as I mentioned earlier, this was a company based around data mining. So what's particularly odd is that in New Albany, Ohio, the New Albany company, which Epstein created on Leslie Wexner's behalf, was a partner in and invested money into, is the owner of the land on which a massive Google data center sits. Did Southern Trust have access to that information? What was going on there? There hasn't been a lot of scrutiny into that either. And it seems like, you know, knowing that what we know, for example, about Sergey Brin being a regular visitor to Epstein's townhouse and all of this other stuff, it's certainly looking quite disturbing, especially when you consider that Google as a company has had intelligence connections from its inception and throughout its existence as a company. And you even have people like Julian Assange, pointing out that Google is not what it seems and is essentially operating as its own intelligence agency and as a front for Hillary Clinton's State Department at the time that he wrote that. Wrote a
right.
book
was it
that.
$500 million that they took from the CIA? And of course, and the back end infrastructure, of course, of Google intimately tied to the intelligence community in the United States.
Right. And at the same time, Epstein and also Leslie Wexner have their intelligence ties and ties also to criminal activity that I covered extensively in my book. So why are these actors coming together and what's going on? What was going on with this data mining firm targeting children and what was and genetic information of people in the U.S. Virgin Islands and all of this stuff in the Google data center? I mean, there's a lot of unanswered questions here. But I mean, considering what's coming out, it definitely seems increasingly disturbing. And another thing that I found really telling.
No, go please. I don't want to, another thing that you found telling. I don't want to interrupt that.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that in the testimony, there's a particular reference Epstein makes to Africa. And he says, I do a lot of work in Africa. And he refers to Africa as fertile ground for experimentation. And so it turns out that Epstein was a major funder of this weird artificial intelligence lab being created in Ethiopia that's tied to the scientist who's overtly transhumanist that he funded extensively named Benjamin Goertzel. Goertzel is, for example, head of Humanity Plus, formerly the World Transhumanist Association, which is an entity that Epstein funded in addition to funding Goertzel's own work. And Goertzel is also the chief scientist at Hanson Robotics, which has produced these human-like robots, the best well-known probably being Sophia, the robot that was, for example, granted citizenship by Mohammed bin Salman at a time when one of his close advisors was Jeffrey Epstein. Again, very, very odd activity there. So as far as what was going on in Ethiopia, at the time that Epstein was investing in this AI lab, and backing Goertzel, Goertzel was teaming up with this blockchain company called Cardano that's pretty well known in the cryptocurrency space. And they were specifically seeking to offer digital ID. Well, it's already happened. They gave a digital ID essentially to 5 million Ethiopian school children with the intention of expanding that. And the whole intention of this is to harvest data from these children. They explicitly say that. So, and even in other documents, Goertzel essentially says that this data is being used to feed, you know, the AI that powers robots like Sophia at Hanson Robotics and stuff. So what exactly is going on here? And what are these transhumanists up to? And why are they so overtly interested in children? And what was Jeffrey Epstein, who was interested in children in numerous disturbing ways, interested in doing? You know, I think this is something that needs to be scrutinized because it seems like Epstein was a child predator in multiple senses.
Do you think that we'll get answers from this lawsuit, what's specifically happening in the U.S. Virgin Islands? Because I have a couple of questions about this, like the families, right? It seems like he was targeting underprivileged families, children specifically, going to Africa, very easy to kind of hide what you're up to. Because we're not going to hear about it. It's not like it's in Georgetown in Washington, D.C., where he's doing these experiments.
Right.
And so then the families, maybe they're paid off, maybe they're quiet. Have we heard from any of the families of these children who've come forward and part of this investigation, or are they kind of quiet?
No, I don't think any of them have really come forward, but if they're, you know, it would be hard to imagine a way for them to do so. As one example, as part of the sex trafficking operation, Epstein and Jean-Luc Brunel were alleged to have paid off poor parents in France. So in order for Epstein to sexually abuse their young children on his birthday. And even despite that being a public story and being in court documents, that family has never come forward to testify. And when, you know, these people, you know, if they're specifically underprivileged, poor, or these are, and some of these things, efforts he was targeting or creating in the Virgin Islands, they targeted abused children, orphan children, juvenile offenders. A lot of those children may not have parents. So again, this is highly disturbing. And, you know, this whole digital ID thing seems to me to be targeting, again, vulnerable populations. If you look at initiatives like ID 2020, for example, which is very much tied up with Bill Gates, they piloted a lot of their stuff overtly with a charity that's been accused of child abuse and child sexual assault, was used to pilot a digital ID program for stateless people in Southeast Asia. And it was framed as voluntary, but if these stateless people wanted to access food, or medical care through this charity, they had to participate in this digital ID program and surrender their biometric information and be part of this experiment. And this same type of effort is what Cardano and these guys, Ben Goertzel, have been behind in Ethiopia, because it's all about, they say it pretty openly, it's about tying a digital ID to a digital wallet and creating basically a surveillance apparatus where these children's performances in schools and what they do in their lives is tracked, and that data is saved, and they're using it to feed artificial intelligence algorithms, most likely without their consent. Because if this is required at all Ethiopian schools, children and their parents have to choose between their children getting an education or being part of this program and having their data given to these obviously predatory people. So again, I find this incredibly disturbing. I think more people should know about it, because we're seeing this whole system being tested on vulnerable populations. But at the end of the day, the intention is to have all children and all people on this kind of system, on this digital ID surveillance grid, tied to your digital wallet that all holds like a CBDC, and have your whole, you know, everything tracked. And Epstein was trying to get ahead of this over a decade ago with his company Southern Trust, and have, you know, your genetic data tied to your education, tied to your finances. I mean, why was he trying to do bio, you know, medicine and financial stuff together? I mean, there's all this weird, weird stuff. And when you consider today, a lot of these same avenues of scientific, well, I don't even really know what to call it, essentially creating this smart grid. You have an entity that I've written about previously called Welcome Leap, which was the Welcome Trust trying to create a DARPA equivalent, and then bringing the head of DARPA during the Obama administration, Regina Dugan, who used to run Google's DARPA equivalent, to run that. That particular entity has a program that's trying to map baby brains and children's brains by subjecting children as young as 3 months of age to eye tracking technology, and different invasive types of surveillance, wearables, all of this weird stuff, to try and figure out how to develop what they call an in silico model of a child's brain, basically trying to make artificial intelligence that's just like a child's brain, ostensibly to create the singularity or something like that. You know, Ben Goertzel, who I referred to earlier, is obsessed with that. And we can assume that Epstein probably was too, since he funded this guy so heavily. You know, he created Singularity Net, and he works for Singularity University and all of this stuff. And I should note that the guy that created Welcome Leap, Jeremy Farrar, is now the chief scientist of the World Health Organization, which has a huge role in deciding what medical interventions should be performed on children or offered to children around the world. You know, this is really stuff that we should be looking into. And the Epstein connection is important, because it makes it very explicit the predatory nature of the people that are trying to push this through. You know, we're seeing promotions of the idea that AI is going to replace everyone's job, but there's this, you know, they're using children in school to try and create, you know, artificial intelligence stuff that will essentially be as intelligent as a regular human and have that kind of consciousness. I mean, that's essentially what they're trying to regulate, to replicate, and they're using children to do so. I mean, it's highly disturbing.
I'm afraid unless we focus on it, I mean, no one really else is covering this, you know, so for us to be able to shed light on this, get this message out there about this, hopefully other journalists, other, you know, maybe large media companies will actually do stories on this and try to look into this more, you know, more deeply. And then hopefully they'll be investigated on the legal process of this. I'll get you out of here on this, which is Southern Trust, after Jeffrey Epstein is killed in prison. What then happens to this data and the people sort of involved in this? Does it just disappear, or is it mysteriously gobbled up by the likes of Google or other places? Like, where does that go?
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of visibility in that because some of the representatives of Epstein's companies, including the ones based in the Virgin Islands, had been caught lying. So there was a bank that was connected to Southern Trust, and that bank, his lawyers claimed, was inactive, but somehow a bunch of money was sent from Epstein's estate to that supposedly inactive bank after he died. Millions of dollars.
What?
So there's weird, and that was in the New York Times. So there's weird stuff going on with all of these companies. Frankly,
you would think that would be easy to track. Who pushed the button on that transfer?
You right? Isn't that trackable? Would be easy to track, right? Yeah. Why won't the NSA or any of these other intelligence agencies that can surveil us to the most minute detail have any of this information? I think a lot of these people have something to hide, especially when you consider that some of the only known client of this bank being the Edmund de Rothschild Group, which was, you know, historically tied to entities like Permindex, which have been, you know, tied to the Kennedy assassination and stuff like that. I mean, these are powerful people that know a lot of people probably don't want to mess with. But if they're targeting, children in developed countries while at the same time claiming like they care about the global South and the developing world and creating this disturbing transhumanist neo-colonialist paradigm. And I mean, essentially Epstein was recruiting kids to work in a coding sweatshop from schools and stuff in the Virgin Islands. And, you know, we're only allowed to talk about his sex trafficking crimes in Palm Beach from 2000 to 2006, as far as mainstream media is concerned. There is a lot more going on here. And the fact that he was guiding the philanthropic activity, for example, of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which does a huge amount of work in Africa as well, and also in the same education space that's aimed at, you know, making remote learning permanent, tele-education, wearables and education. These are all things that are still going on even after Epstein's gone. You know, this is just a microcosm into a larger group of people who are masquerading as philanthropists, but really they're building a digital prison and they're piloting it out right now on vulnerable kids, mainly Black kids in Africa and the Caribbean.
You blow my mind once again. This is astonishing stuff. Hopefully we can get the message out about this and more people can start to shed light on this story and we can pull further on this thread. Whitney Webb, great to see you. Thank you so much for this work as usual. And we will continue to follow this story. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's really the most disturbing part of this is the children, you know, the children that are silenced, the parents that are silenced or paid off that can't come forward and talk about this or who we don't even know who they are because there's not some investigatory body looking for these people, looking for these children. Like, can somebody dive into these documents and track and find out where these families are and what sort of medical experiments were done on these people and what is actually still happening in the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation? What are the Gateses doing with all of this? I love what Pulsar Echo in our chat says, sounds far worse than the story we already knew. Yeah, exactly. This is way worse than what we already knew about his trafficking. Yeah. Go ahead, Philip or David. I couldn't hear who I was.
That was me. I was going to say, I bet Melinda absolutely hates having her name tied to this because of how much she hated Epstein. Everybody's like Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Mm-hmm. They need to just say Bill Gates because she had wanted nothing to do with that.
Well, obviously. Perhaps. I know we've talked about that. Did she? And I know that Whitney Webb certainly has some thoughts as to whether or not it's convenient now to be able to, plus a divorce and Jeffrey Epstein being killed in prison and Ghislaine Maxwell being silenced in prison or whatever in her country club. It's convenient now for her to be able to say, I met him one time and he made my skin crawl. Yeah. Yet your husband went there 46 times. And this is really? It's convenient. It's certainly convenient. And actually, Whitney Webb, in my last interview with her, actually a few months ago, Whitney Webb said on our show, there's more about Melinda Gates in this that we haven't heard.
Okay. Philip, go ahead.
Yeah. What blows my mind about this is that all of the names being named that are still out there known and not investigated and no one ever will. You know, you've got these like high profile people and they're not being secretive. We know where they are. We know what they're doing. We know their ties to it, but yet they'll never be investigated.
Yeah.
And that just infuriates me.
Well, yep, that's the way it goes. We got more news to get to. You want to...
We do indeed. So in order to tell you about this last story, that's where we're going, right?
Yeah. Well, before we do that, hey, I wanted to just mention, I know you're struggling to find something there. I saw someone in the chat say we have 4,000 likes right now on our YouTube channel. Can we push that up to like 10,000? We've got about 17,000 people watching, 16,000 people watching. It really helps us push the show out to a larger audience. So if you could smash that like button, really, really appreciate it. That's all we ask of you.
All right. Well, we're going to move on to this next story. And because it has to do with COVID vaccines, there are certain platforms we have to say goodbye to right now. So we're going to say goodbye to our audience, particularly on YouTube. We stay on Twitter when we do this?
We stay on Twitter. We got it. There's literally stuff that we're about to say in this story that will get us banned and blocked on YouTube.
That are against the terms of service for YouTube, even though what I'm about to share with you is a new published study in the Journal of Nature about the COVID vaccine. But the current rules on the platforms that we're referring to are that you can't say anything against the COVID vaccine, so we're not going to mess around.
Yeah, so we're going to do our next segment exclusively on Rumble. That's where we'll be.
So join us if you would like. You see the URL right there. You know how to get to Rumble. You know how to find us there. We are just redacted on Rumble. So do a little stretch, stand up and walk around if you need to, and a goodbye to YouTube. We will see you. This is our last show. Oh, if we don't see you on Rumble, happy Mother's Day to those of you celebrating this weekend.
Yes.
And thank you. We got a super chat saying happy Mother's Day as well. And I really appreciate that. That was at the top of the show. And so, yes, I hope all of the mothers out there have a restful weekend. And all of you reproductive goddesses or, you know, whatever mother you come in, whatever form. Anyhow, okay, so we'll see you on Monday after Mother's Day. To Rumble we go.
All right.
This is not a long story, so I'm just going to jump right in. I'm going to jump.
Okay, starting from the top.
Okay, so here we go. Thank you for staying with us. Sorry, we're having some technical difficulties. A new study shows that COVID vaccines are associated with a higher risk of blood clots in the eyes that can cause blindness. Blindness, I say. So here is the study, published study, done by Taiwanese researchers from the Chengshan Medical University Hospital and China Medical University School of Medicine. They collected data on over 95 million individuals, and here is how that data breaks down. So what we're looking at is how they took 95 million people, they separated it into vaccinated and non-vaccinated, and then they filtered out by anyone who had had previous eye infections or eye retinal occlusion is what it's called. And then they whittled it down to this 700,000 people in both categories to see who had experienced this retinal vascular occlusion. What that is a clotting in the vein in the eye, and it is the most common cause of blindness. Now, what they found was that two doses of the mRNA vaccine increased the risk of this retinal vascular occlusion. There was a slight risk after the first dose, which the authors called not significant, but a higher risk after the second. Now, here is that conclusion. The overall risk of retinal vascular occlusion in the vaccinated cohort was 2.19 times higher than that in the unvaccinated cohort at 2 years. Now, the risk continues to go up depending on how closely together you got that vaccine, but it sticks around for within 2 years. These numbers were not huge, but they were significant, and specifically the difference was significant. So if you look at the number of people who had this happen, 240 unvaccinated people had this retinal vascular occlusion, but the number of vaccinated people was 415. So that's not a huge group of people, this happening in 95 million people, but it still does show a 2.19 times higher risk when you have been vaccinated. So this is more data that I just presented you for the mainstream media not to report on, but some politicians will speak of it. What I want to show you here is Republican candidate Vivek Ramaswamy saying this week about the Steve Deese show about taking the COVID vaccine.
But I think that based on the facts that we have now, I'll be very honest with you. I got both the shots. Okay. Ron DeSantis won't tell you whether he got the second shot. I don't know about anybody else. I'll be very honest with you. If I was to go through it again, I wouldn't have done it the same way. I think that gives you the clearest answer I possibly can give.
Okay. Now, there we go. That's a real answer from a politician because, you know, everyone's been so so Joe Biden, you know, made a big to-do about getting his boosters and his vaccines. We saw it, right? And he's still all in. So glad I did that. Republican candidates have been a bit more cagey about how many they've had, whether or not they took the vaccine, whether or not they feel like they are glad they did that. I appreciate this answer. He's saying, I did it. And, you know, if I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't have done it. That at least is sort of turning the tides of like, we can talk about this. We can talk about whether or not it was a good thing, whether or not it was pushed on us, especially if we have candidates like this. We know how RFK Jr. feels about it. He's been critical of the vaccine all along. So now it does feel like we'll have some people willing to lift the conversation about the COVID vaccine and the counterindications of taking the COVID vaccine. Whether or not the mainstream media allows them the platform to do that remains to be seen.
It would be nice to see if they're going to be able to do that, you know, because you have YouTube people in the chat are asking, why can't this segment be on YouTube? Literally the first sentence that you said in this segment, it would be, would get us blocked and banned on YouTube.
You cannot say that the COVID vaccine is associated with harm, I think. Is that how it's put?
In the terms of service?
Yeah. Correct. You cannot say that the vaccine causes any harm, any medical harm whatsoever. You can't say on YouTube.
Even if it's...
And it's not just like freaking Nostradamus could ascend from the heavens with a golden tablet from God saying, we've proven this happens. If you say it on YouTube, you will get banned.
Yeah.
It's a community strike.
I mean, like, we could miraculously all tomorrow wake up with it written across our foreheads and we still couldn't cover it on YouTube.
Yeah. But no, like this tattoo appeared on my forehead. Yeah, we couldn't do it. So you hope that these politicians will be able to, you know, talk and actually maybe even force like YouTube's hand about this.
Anyway, we've had a week, you guys. Mercury retrograde ends in a few days and hopefully, you know, it... These tech problems always coincide with Mercury retrograde, whether you want to believe it or not.
Yeah,
it's a truth, and it's ending. So why don't we wrap up our show before we have this happen to us again? We want to say thank you for joining us. Please subscribe to us on Rumble. You know, share it with your friends. And remember, if you subscribe, your name comes up on the board. And also subscribe to the newsletter. Head on over to redacted.inc. You can also join our community there so that we can talk to you if our internet goes out. You will receive a newsletter from us tomorrow. We produce it Monday through Friday, so there will be news for you. And we will see you on Monday. Thanks so much, everybody, for joining us.
Yeah, have a great night, everyone.